Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, citizens, to the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 240. Hey, The Nerdist is a TV show now on BBC America. On Saturdays through August, you can see us Saturday night doing a series of specials. We have specials devoted to time travel, specials devoted to geek girls. We did a tribute to science. We did a tribute to Comic-Con. So check out bbcamerica.com for showtimes. But I do believe that it is at 9, 8 central on Saturday night on BBC America. The Nerdist Podcast is also going to come IRL to your town if you live in New York. Or Toronto. Toronto will be there September 22nd, I believe, for a JFL, Just for Laughs 42. It's JL42.com. And then also in New York, New York Comic Con will be there the Friday night, I believe, of New York Comic Con at the Best Buy Mega Theater Center. So if you go to Nerdist.com/calendar, you can get info for that as well. Hey, Stamps.com, thank you for supporting this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. We all need to mail things. Now, still, we have to do it, so you need stamps on things, and sometimes you don't know how much postage you're going to need, so stamps.com will help you figure out exactly what the postage you need, we'll put it right on the thing that you need to mail, and then your mail carrier come pick it up. You never have to set foot in a post office. You don't even have to find a blue box, which, by the way, they have removed a lot of around the country. The post office has removed several blue boxes, because they're expensive, and the government's running out of money. Anyway, I'm not here to berate the government for running out of money. I'm here to talk to you about stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage using your own computer. From wherever you are, you just need an account. Right now, you can use the promo code Nerdist for a special offer. It's a no-risk trial, $110. Digital scale and $55 of free postage. Free! The best price for anything! So don't wait. Go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Nerdist. That's stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. This podcast was really fucking awesome. We came up here to Meltdown Comics, where our space is. Katie Levine is over there. She engineered. If you want a little behind the scenes, she engineered this episode. We all had an amazing time with Will Ferrell, who I never actually met until I moderated the panel for the campaign at Comic-Con. And by the way, the campaign opens Friday, August 10th. It's Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis. The Red Band trailer that I saw at Comic-Con was fucking awesome. And I highly recommend. Just go see it. Don't stop the podcast to go see it. No, you know what? Fuck it. Stop the podcast to go see the movie. Then come back out and finish listening to the podcast on the drive home. The campaign with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis. But I've always admired Will because he seems to be a guy that he just seems like a happy guy, which in comedy is sometimes a rare thing. So he seems like a happy guy, and he seems to work on stuff that he loves. And I respect him a lot. And, you know, just as a comedy nerd, this was a tremendously huge thing for me to have him on the podcast. So, I don't know. I'm just grins. I'm just all grins now. Just all happy about it. Did you have fun?
It was a lot of fun.
Engineering
it. Was
really
cool.
Yeah. It was neat.
Oh, I'm a big fan of his, so.
Did you feel like you were listening to just a podcast, and then you open your eyes and you're like, oh, fuck, they're all right there? Do you ever do that?
No, but I'll start.
Okay.
Like that.
All right, good. So just shut your eyes and pretend that this is the intro right now.
Okay.
All ready? Okay. Katie, I'm watching you. See, that's what a podcast would do, because it would get inside your head. So this is episode number 240 of the Nerdist Podcast with the wonderful Will Ferrell.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Stand-up, per se?
There is, like, me and Kumail Nanjiani have a stand-up night on Wednesdays, and then he has an open mic on Sundays. But other than that, it's just kind of free-form.
Like, Dan Harmon does an improv show here once a week, Dana Gould and Koechner and those guys do a monthly show. Yeah. And so it's just sort of...
Yeah, there's music comedy shows.
It's a lot of the comedy nerds you probably know.
It's actually... No, it's great.
All right, you ready? Are you recording, Katie Levine?
It's recording.
Oh, my God. I don't want to hear anything in my head, Katie Levine.
Same here. What's up?
Katie Levine's recording.
There are plugs down here that aren't doing anything.
That's it, Katie. Clean.
Hey.
We've never recorded a
podcast. Okay.
I didn't even get clean up your stuff. Now you could just like unorganize your stuff.
Katie,
again.
Now mine's too loud.
Jonah, you could just do this.
Do what?
Jonah, don't just touch.
How
the,
do you?
You're
just tapping the table.
Let's see which one.
You just guess which one you are.
That's it. I was right.
No, you could totally fuck someone up. You're just like up and down really
check,
fast.
Check,
and
check, check.
Oh, I guessed right too.
Did you find yours?
Yes.
Nicely
that's
done.
That's exciting.
So we have to be very careful.
I'm just really bad at guessing. I just go for Will's, even though he clearly just got it correct.
Because you just want to blow his ears out.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful not to pound on this table because these mics are very sensitive. So that's the only rule, you guys.
Okay.
I don't
want
to make it not fun, but let's just try to recognize some structure.
No pounding on the
all
table.
All I'm saying is if we follow the rules.
I wish the rules were there are no rules.
There are no rules except you can't
except
pound on the
one.
Table. Yeah, that's just the one. That's almost like zero
it's
rules.
Not bad.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's one more than I need.
All right, you can set your arms on the table, but you just can't pound on them.
That's elbows?
Like,
elbows
half
good?
A rule. Elbows are okay. It's rude.
Oh.
It's bad etiquette, but you can do it.
If you
it just
say that,
shows
I think
that you were raised
okay.
in some kind of...
That's actually soothing.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of white noise.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole podcast. Someone at a certain point would just...
Oh, that's nice.
You're almost like a Foley artist.
Yeah.
Oh, here comes...
Grab your box of sand. Yeah.
Dave Foley.
Oh. Yeah. Dave Foley, Foley artist.
Just draw Dave Foley out of different materials.
I hope that thunderstorm doesn't hit any time soon.
Oh, thunder.
Keanu Reeves, Foley artist.
You know, he's got heart. He's just not...
Rumble?
No, Keanu, you don't just say the name of the sound. You actually have to create the sound.
Rain.
That is good.
No, I'm just a Rain Wilson fan.
Cat meowing. Cat meowing.
Neon cat.
Their speed was on the other day.
Yeah.
And I had 45 minutes before I had to be somewhere. So I watched 45
sure,
minutes
of
speed.
That's what you do with it.
Which you forget that there's about 45 minutes of plot setup before you get to the bus part.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd totally forgotten that.
Yeah.
I thought it just started with...
Just Sandra Bullock in Venice Beach, right?
Yeah. I just... And then I forgot that...
There is a whole...
And he and Jeff Daniels are these buddies. And,
oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Jeff Daniels is in
this.
Oh, because they sent him to the, wrong house.
Yeah.
He's their partner.
Spoiler alert.
And he has the puppy dog face.
How many years old is that spoiler alert?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
You're not supposed to spoil it.
And he has that real sad puppy dog face when he realizes he's about to die. Just...
Dennis Hopper's the crazy bad guy.
Dennis Hopper's the crazy guy. And then there's like, I think, a good half an hour after they're off the bus.
Yeah, but you think it's over.
Yeah,
you think it's done.
Once it's settled, there's still another.
Yeah. There's like, and then they go and get him.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden they have like a whole sting operation around his.
Is there not a subway involved? Or did I make that?
That might have been cruise control.
I'm thinking of Money Train.
You're thinking Money Train.
Yeah.
You're thinking Silver Streak.
Yeah. But
you're thinking of Speed 5, Subhuman, where everything was just underground.
Yeah,
and they added
and vampires.
Never.
And chuds.
The thing about gotta have chuds.
Yeah. Chud. I never saw Chud.
What are we doing here? Why don't we just put these mics down and go watch Chud?
Cannibalistic human underdwellers.
We should go, and then we should resume the conversation.
Well, we
okay.
We
just see you guys next year. We got a lot to watch.
Chud.
Didn't need to see Chud.
Turns out, wasted a lot of time, guys. A lot of valuable inventing minutes. We could have.
In fact, it bummed us all out. We're just gonna go home.
Just shut it down.
Yeah.
I just sat through Batman and Robin because I did Paul Scheer's podcast. How did this get made?
Oh yeah.
So we had to watch Batman and Robin, which is infinitely worse than you remember.
Oh,
there was one scene where Alicia Silverstone, the first time she shows up as Batgirl, says to Batman, "Bruce, it's me, Barbara. I found the Batcave."
Maybe they,
and there was an outfit for a girl.
Yeah, no, she was already in the outfit.
Well, that was probably in pickups when they were like, "Well, we didn't really explain how she got here.
Yeah. We better cover this."
And it's all off camera. You just hear her saying it.
Yeah, we'll just get it once. We'll never use it.
Do you want to do more than one take? Do you want to do more than one take?
Oh, I don't think so.
Because I have another one. Bruce, it is I, Barbara.
What is this I have fallen into?
World's greatest detective. It's me.
Is this some kind of bad cave?
Yeah, it's the thing that I remember about Speed is that the 105 freeway wasn't completed yet.
That's
so that
right.
dates that movie to me because they jumped over the.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're going in a vehicle really fast, it doesn't mean you're going to get lift if you go off the end of something.
And
it doesn't at all.
It tilts up.
Something naturally has to be built up. A natural ramp.
A ramp.
Has to be there.
Of some type.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's it.
And what was the,
get that guy on the phone. Who made that movie?
What was the one? What was the line when they hit the carriage and he turns? He's like, "Cans. It was only cans."
Oh, ringtone. Ringtone.
Anyway,
Will, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks
on
for
the
having
podcast.
Me.
It is a true pleasure.
I got so excited today because I woke up thinking this is my first podcast I've ever been on.
What?
Whoa.
And then I remember, no, I was on another one.
God damn it! What other? Which other podcast?
Rich Eisen of NFL Network. He has
okay.
a podcast. Yeah, so nice. That was my first official podcast.
Sportsy podcast.
A sportsy one, and now this is my second official podcast.
You went to the other side of the spectrum.
Went to the other side, exactly.
Yeah. So you're just sort of checking out the lay of the land.
I'm just checking them out. I don't want to, you know, get too podcast heavy right out of the gate.
Of course. When do you want to get like podcast heavy?
few feet past the gate. Just a few feet past the gate.
Yeah. Well, I'm dipping my toe right now, and we'll see. We'll see.
Call Jason Heyman at the Creative Artists Agency. Hey, man, I'm ready to get podcast heavy.
Let's load up on the podcast.
Will, do you want to keep doing movies at all?
No. We're good.
So we shouldn't be that good, so we're one of the only podcasts he'll do, but still have it be good enough to where it's a good episode.
Yeah. So it's sort of like the plot of Major League. We have to tank this episode so that Will can move the podcast to Florida.
Miami.
Miami.
So this is exciting. Thank you for having
me. Oh, please. This is a true honor. We're here at Meltdown. It's not even open yet. We're just in a comic book store that's closed.
By the way, what time do they open?
I really 11.
I think they 11. Just opened.
All right.
Oh, okay.
But we...
people are flooding in.
I mean, they camp out at night.
Yeah.
It's like Hall H. Yeah.
Is that Glenn Danzig? or a strong woman?
It's not
this
Glenda Danzig.
This is a soundproof area.
Glenn or Glenda Danzig. Let's make that...
Glenda.
Yeah.
Genius. We had never, I feel like we have a lot of comedy friends in common. I'd never met you until you came out on stage at Comic-Con.
So bizarre. Yeah. And thank you for being there, by the way.
Oh, my God. It was so much fun.
You know, that thing is so, like, you can't, can you hear yourself? Can you hear other people on the panel when you're up there?
It's hard, but yeah, I can.
Because, it's difficult to hear each other and...
Which makes comedy sometimes difficult when you can't hear.
But you saved us countless times by keeping the ball in the air for us. Yeah.
Please, you guys are great. And what's fun for me is watching Zach be uncomfortable when so much of the stuff that he does is about creating uncomfortable situations, but then to see him be genuinely uncomfortable.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. that we just completed 2 weeks of me watching Zach be completely uncomfortable as we for this movie, The Campaign.
Yes.
Opening August 10th.
Is it rated yet? It's very close to the wire, and it still says not rated.
It says not rated?
It still says not rated.
Oh, really? No.
It's really
it's
X.
I think that's a trick to get to trick families of thinking that they can bring their children to it.
As they're walking into the theater. It's rated!
It's rated R.
Oh, shit. We're already here.
This seems like it's going to pick up where my fellow Americans left off.
It's not that bad of an R. But it's rated R. But the funny thing was that we had suggested a long time ago when we met with the Warner Brothers marketing people that we would be up for this movie lent itself to doing some stunt type things in character, you know, debating and if we could do some colleges and that sort of thing. Well, then Zach has to grow his beard out because for Hangover 3 and everything.
Right.
So then we were like, that's not really going to work. But then the studio was still excited, thinking we wanted to do all these cities and all these stunts. So there we were kind of doing these stunts that were, so it was just
half-baked.
It was it was great to watch Zach as I would force him to, like, because we'd go to St. Louis, for instance, and there, like, God bless the people of St. Louis, but it's literally 100 degrees, and you know, 1,000 people turned up in this town, this square, and with babies, and we're just like, why? I wouldn't wait for us. Like, yeah, it's okay. Go home.
They got,
like,
nothing else there.
And but I just loved, like, I'd literally say a couple words and then just go, ladies and gentlemen, Zach Galifianakis! And they would go, you know, crazy, as they should. And then he's just like, oh, now I have to speak. But yeah, we had a lot of awkward moments.
Well, at the panel, obviously people, like, one of the last questions was trying to force you guys to get into your characters.
Right, that's right.
And so if you naturally are like, you're just, you know, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
And then it turns to Zach and he's just like, it was almost like he just wanted to be like, fuck, like, you, like, but he kind of gave in.
Yeah, I know. And of course, then we, our last city was Washington, D.C., Tuesday night. What is today?
It's Thursday.
And we finally got our patter down on the last event. We finally got our little shtick worked out on the very last thing we did.
So you workshopped it for all the main
shows. We workshopped it. We literally let people down for 2.5 weeks doing bad, unprepared bad comedy.
You got to the gold.
And then we finally got to the gold.
Save it for the Capitol.
Yeah.
Save it for Obama.
But we had just fantastic moments. Well, they put us on a Zamboni machine driving through the streets of Toronto, which I kind of loved.
Sure.
Because I legitimately loved it, and then also I love the fact that Zach is just hanging on the side going, this is why I got into the biz. Yeah.
He'd rather be on his farm.
Oh, my gosh. And then we had to throw out, you know, dueling first pitches at the Cubs game, and Zach had a very funny idea, like, we should just have a pizza delivered in between the two pitches. And I thought, oh, that's really funny. So we arranged for this pizza, and we just wanted it to be weird, you know, so that I throw the first pitch, and then all of a sudden a pizza comes out, and we don't have money to pay for it. And, we ask the player who's catching for, you know, do you have money? And, you know, and just drag it out really uncomfortably long. Well, for some reason, the PA announcement, they gave the information to the announcer at the Cubs, you know, for the stadium. And all of a sudden you hear, I throw out the first pitch, and then you hear this voice goes, uh-oh, ladies and gentlemen, looks like someone's ordered a pizza. Oh. And it was just like, now it looks really terrible. It wasn't going to be good to begin with, but now it really looks bad. I just started really laughing.
Like a bad wrestling announcer. Like, yes. What's going? This is unprecedented.
And I think he even gave it a plug. Like, looks like some delicious Giordano's pizza's coming.
Now with cheese in the crust.
Some from Giordano's called him, slipped him some money, and said, why don't you make sure people know Giordano's is here.
So we left a trail of underwhelming appearances.
And you know, that guy really felt like he was keeping the comedy train
exactly.
going.
He was like, well, it needs to be set up.
I'm just helping out.
This is unexplained. It needs to be explained. He probably took it upon himself.
Guys, I just got back from a Second City show. I know how this works.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids, did I ever tell you about the time I bailed out Farrell and Galifianakis at the Cubs game?
It's a yes and simple stuff.
They were going to have a pizza delivered totally out of context. Yeah. And I provided it some excellent context. Yeah. And you could feel there was a collective sigh of relief amongst the patrons that day.
Because I was like, pizza? Oh, pizza.
Pizza. Yeah.
Giordani's.
Anyway, I never got a thank you note from them. Oh, well. Pass the mashed potatoes, please.
Time to put this on my IMDb.
Then he just walks into the garage, you just hear a gunshot.
Right,
that was it. That was his last.
The car starts for a while, taking too long, then he shoots himself.
By the way, did I hear a rumor? Was there a rumor circulating that you died in a hang gliding accident several years ago?
There was a long time ago, yeah. Yeah, there was. I think I was shooting Blades of Glory in Montreal, and Matt, my publicist who's here, calls me. He's like, I'm just letting you know there's this rumor that you died in a hang. I'm like, what? And
your first reaction, did I?
And I was like, oh, shoot, you know, I got to. I gotta call my parents and make sure they don't just see it on like the CNN ticker or something.
Right.
And but the best part was I turned on that night after work. I was watching like Extra or Access Hollywood or whatever. What's the one that Billy Bush is on?
Oh, it's Access Hollywood.
Yeah. Access Extra Wood.
And,
Billy Bush.
Access Extra Wood. And inside the edition of Access
Extra Wood. Inside the edition of American Journalist.
Yeah. Tonight.
And I watch Billy Bush go really sarcastically like rumors that Will Ferrell died in a hang gliding accident weren't true. Boo hoo.
Mm. What?
What the fuck?
I don't know where that's coming from.
The craziest, the weirdest
thing.
That's
weird.
Yeah. So,
did you ever have you seen him since then?
No, I've never seen him.
Was it because you made fun of his family member?
Maybe.
Yeah.
We just figured it out. Yeah.
I mean,
maybe that was
it. All comes back.
Yeah. Oh shit.
But anyway, yeah, there was a rumor that
that he started.
Yeah, that someone
Billy Bush.
Bush family started.
Do you have that? Is it you? I know you started at Groundlings, right. For you know, like a 93 or 4, was it?
Yeah, 93, yeah.
And so 99. So you've been around comedy for a long time. Have you felt that thing that some comedians kind of get to a certain point in their career and they're like, I just need to be taken seriously. I just really need to be taken seriously, and they just like kick comedy away?
No.
Good.
I don't in fact, Zach and I, we were talking about that it's fun to do serious things if you're offered them and it feels like the right thing, but no, it's not a statement that no one's taking me seriously. Yeah, yeah. But we were analyzing, like, it's funny how there is such a backlash, though, against that in a way sometimes. Yeah.
When someone wants to be taken seriously.
Yeah, or at least, you know. Jim Carrey does a serious move, and everyone's like, "What's going on?"
Well, it's like being heckled from the front row. Be funny.
Yeah. Whereas on the flip side, if a dramatic actor takes a comedic turn, it's like, wonderful.
Such a great job, you guys.
Did you have any idea he could do that?
Oh, good looking and funny.
This opens up a bunch of new doors for you, right? Comedian, go back to being funny.
And then the opposite is this closes a lot of doors for you, doesn't
it? So you did that. Yeah.
But that same thing happened to Woody Allen, like after Annie Hall in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Like it's like he, I can't remember the movie that was right after that.
So that was super. Did he do something super serious?
No, he did. No. Like he did a really good, like
something
weird.
Okay.
One,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
Like there's aliens going, why don't you go back to being funny?
Yeah, you were so good at that. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I'll always love comedy. Yeah,
that's good. I had Anna Gasteyer on the podcast.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
She told me this great story about that. I think your mom told her.
Okay,
which is that when you were a kid, you were gonna take square dancing lessons,
right?
And at the same time, the school said, "Hey, we think Will should be in our gifted academic program."
Oh, right. Yeah,
and your parents said to you, listen, you can either take this gifted program to accelerate your learning, or you can take square dancing classes, and you're like, I just want square dance.
Yeah.
And so they were like, okay, fine.
Yeah. No, it was the whatever period of time where the special gifted class took place, because it was still elementary school, I had refused to go do it. And then my mom had asked me, well, why don't you want to do that? Oh, I would miss square dancing. So she just went, all right. I can't argue with that. So, yeah.
That's a good parent, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Instead of trying to force you into something you didn't want to do. Yeah.
So.
But I think
Here's to Kay Farrell.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Pour a little out on the... Piss in the air.
Don't pound on the table.
But I think... Oh, I'm sorry. I just broke my own rule. All right, guys.
See you later. Now it's time for the Jonah Show. It's Jonah Show. It's a Jonah Show.
40 minutes of that.
Yeah.
But when I look at your career and all the stuff you do... You have a career path that I love because it really just seems like, yeah, I want to work on that, so I'm going to work on that. Or I want to do a movie in Spanish, so I'm just going to do a movie in Spanish.
Right.
And I think as a whole, as a career, people really respect that you don't really seem to be bullied into doing stuff you don't want to do.
Well, I try not to be. I mean, I'm lucky enough to where I'm allowed to make those choices, you know. Yeah. It's always fun to me to have at least part of the audience, this is probably not shrewd, but part of the audience scratching their head going, why did he do that?
Yeah.
So.
And was that the Milwaukee?
That was the old Milwaukee one, which we just shot another. I was, we go to Sweden every summer, because my wife's Swedish, And yeah, that's really the only reason, because I hate
the
it there.
Reason.
Yeah, she forces me to go.
Yeah.
No, we go. We have a place over there, and she has a bunch of family, blah blah blah. But Andrew Steele over at Funny or Die, we did the old Milwaukee stuff. He's like, "What if we come over to Stockholm for a day and shoot some more old Milwaukee commercials?" So we're like, "Let's do it," which is fantastic, because they're gonna air in Sweden only. For a beer that's not sold there.
Yes.
And I don't. There's no plans for the beer to be sold there ever.
For a city they've never heard of.
Yeah. So it's just going to be, you're going to turn on, you know, Swedish television and see an American actor who maybe you know or don't know.
Yeah.
Trying to speak Swedish, selling an American beer that you can't.
Do you speak Swedish?
I speak enough. Yeah.
Well, what old Milwaukee commercial in Swedish? What is that?
Well, I just say, you know, like we were out on a boat in the middle of the Stockholm harbor and we were just did thing. I just would say like, this is my boat. This is my lady. We had like a Swedish, beautiful Swedish woman extra. And this is my beer, old Milwaukee beer. And then in Swedish, I said, it's okay. it's all right.
Because okay. They're confused.
The subtitle is going to be like, "It's great."
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But
they're confused, and you're just telling them it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, yeah. But yeah, I kind of relish the opportunities to kind of keep mixing it up whenever I can.
Is that just the comic gene at work?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's the just trying to kind of keep exploring things and. Yeah, it's that thing, you know, Zach and I doing all this press. It's whenever someone tells you to do one thing, you immediately want to do the opposite.
Right.
And we were constantly, you know, when Zach's asked, what would Alan from The Hangover say? And he'd just be like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think he
would
say
he's the guy that when he was working on that True Calling, that Fox show,
and
he would have interviews, and they go, so, you know, is this the kind of show that you like to watch? And he's like, not really.
I remember seeing footage of him doing press for Becker. Yeah. Or no, not Becker, for what's Bored to Death. And then, like, every time Ted Danson would start talking, he's like, no one wants to hear about Becker.
No, he's got some hilarious, because I think he tells the story of when that show got canceled.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I forget how it, but his first question, the showrunners like gather everyone together and like, so guys, the show's been canceled. Because another show was coming in.
Yeah.
And Zach immediately asked, when did casting begin for this other show?
I remember that story. And he said that no one else was in the mood for it.
No one laughed. People have families and are losing jobs.
Yeah.
And he's flippantly making comments.
Yeah. Well, he used to do these. Yeah. I remember he was. I went over to England in like 2001 or something for like a couple of weeks, and he was shooting a movie there, and he was telling these stories about how he would do stand up in England, and people weren't, like, some of the British audiences weren't getting his act.
Yeah.
And so he would, like, pound his hand on the table and be like, God damn it, I am an American! You respect me!
Yeah.
And but all the other comedians in the back were dying.
Right,
but
right,
the audience
right.
was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, yeah. And that it's the crowds that are super, they'll just get on your ass, like, immediately.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If it's not working.
They gotta be, like, 10 jokes a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they, so Groundlings... Was it you started in 93? Who else was that at that time? Was it like Kathy Griffin and
Kathy Griffin,
Karen Maruyama's, and McDonald?
Right, that was like the they were kind of the main stage players.
Yeah.
When I was taking classes, so it was like Patrick Bristow, Mike McDonald, Tim Bagley.
Oh, Tim's great.
Yeah, and Michael Hitchcock. Just great ensemble and so when we were coming through, it was like myself and Jennifer Coolidge, and well, Coolidge had been there for a little while, and Catan, and then like Anna and Chris Parnell, and were a little bit behind us, and yeah, but you know, just a great great group of talented people before it started becoming the ticket to get on SNL.
The Factory, yeah.
And which apparently I remember talking to Jim Wise, who was teaching a class, and he literally said, after a couple of people got on the show, that the vibe had totally changed. That people in the classes were like, you know, you go around the room, what's your name? What do you do? What are you hoping to get out of the class? And Later it was like, I want to be on Saturday Night Live in a month. You know, it was just this mercenary, like, you know, as opposed to when it was kind of a great spirit when I was there, where you'd have these improv classes where you'd have a lot of actors, but you'd also have like housewives and people in business who just want to work on their public speaking. And so it was a really eclectic crew as opposed to just everyone trying to get somewhere.
I remember taking an intro class there, and like the guy, he's like, before we get started, this is not a way to get into Saturday Night Live or Mad TV. Like, if that's what you want, please do not take this class, because this is about the art and the form
of
it. And
I think they started having to kind of give that piece of instruction, because I think everyone just thought, oh, this is how you do it. Great.
Yeah. And some of those lower level classes, they start improvising, and then you just see people just trying to throw catchphrases into the improv. You're like,
crazy.
No!
And then I heard my wife actually took a class, and just for fun, and she said then other people wouldn't improvise with certain people because, no, you're not funny, I'm not going to go up with you.
Oh, there is that feeling, though, when you're doing improv, and then, like, you start to walk out, and then someone, you're like, nah. Yeah.
But, and yet, those were those moments where, you know, I just remember the teachers I had, it just, like, you were forced to just go up with whoever and mix it up, and then, you know, sometimes it's terrible, it's not working, but you learn to kind of work on your own thing.
You shouldn't stop walking out.
But I was just flabbergasted that people would refuse to go up on stage, and it's weird, But anyway.
Well, that same thing sort of happened with stand-up when stand-ups were getting television deals. Then a bunch of people in L.A. were like, okay, I just need 5 minutes. Yeah. 5 good minutes.
Here I go.
Yeah. So it's sort of it's more the short-term approach to comedy rather than like, no, this is fun and I want to try to develop. And
which I remember my futile attempt at stand-up, my 5 minutes. I could literally got 2 jokes out, I think, in 5 minutes. Because it was just...
The rest was exposition.
It was just a lot of setup.
It looks like I've ordered a pizza.
Yeah.
And then the bus.
Yeah. Paint the picture and then do my character voice and then... Oh, flashlight. Okay. Okay. I got to go.
Things have changed so much. Now it's just a phone instead of a flashlight.
The iPhone. Then they just paid you. Paid you?
Yes, they paid you.
Pager. I'm sticking with it.
Every comic gets a pager.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's true. They probably hit your cell phone. Right?
Yeah, they hit your cell phone.
Funny. Okay.
That's it. When we go do live shows like around the country, I send them a text. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I never feel it.
I never have once seen it either.
Yeah. And then when I get walk off stage, I look at my phone and go, oh fuck, how long did I go?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I got
oh, that was 17 minutes ago.
I got the emoji. I send you a little picture of a light bulb.
You do. You're not kidding. You do.
Yeah.
Clever. That's why you go the extra mile.
It's at least a mile to just select a different character.
That's also our Christmas bonus is just an emoji.
But doesn't it make you feel a little bit better for the Christmas spirit?
It's that personal touch.
Better than money.
An emoji.
But I'm kind of curious to, like, because you came on Saturday Night Live, right? They had just sort of recast a bunch of people, and, like, Koechner came on, and a bunch of people came on, and then after that first season, which, bafflingly, even with Koechner, they were like, okay, we gotta sort of start over again.
I know, it was weird, yeah. Yeah, I remember sitting in a meeting with Lauren and Mark McKinney, and towards the end of the season, we were feeling good. We thought felt like the buzz was happening again about the show, and of course, being completely idealistic and thinking of things that the show would never do, we went to Lauren's office saying, "What if we did like a traveling show this summer, and we did a couple sketches each, and we did like a 10-city tour and." And Lauren's like, well, you know, some of you aren't coming back.
We're
like,
what? Oh, shit. And Mark didn't come back the next year, right? Or was he?
I think he did.
He lasted like 3 years, right?
Yeah. I can't remember if he did. He might not have. That might have been on his own accord. But
So you weren't like, okay, so an A company, a B company.
And we're like, And we were both like, oh, we thought everything looked good.
But we're a family.
Mommy and Daddy, what happened? What did we do? Why are you getting a divorce? but yeah, it was strange to have, you know, this unique opportunity where a brand new cast, a brand new group of writers came in and we felt like we had some momentum, and then there were still changes. It was a little disheartening.
Did you like the SNL process, or did you still feel under the gun?
You know, I was probably too ignorant to know any better, too naive, but yeah, I did. I thought it was great. It was a perfect place for, you know, I mean, it's like those classes of the Groundlings where, you know, they would set an egg timer for 2 minutes and you have to write a sketch, and those skills came into play in that kind of, you know, atmosphere and environment. So I could run off and write something on my own, I was fortunate that the writers started writing for me a bunch. And, yeah. So the whole thing just kind of kept snowballing. And, but I never felt, you know, I think it really, the first three seasons, things were pretty, I mean, it was fun the whole time I was there, but the first three seasons, everything worked really well. And then people started having egos and that sort of thing. But even then it wasn't bad.
How long into it did you feel comfortable? Like, you're like, I'm going to stick around here. I don't have a fear of getting fired.
It was, I think, you know, the first show kind of, or first season was, I think it was nine. You were only guaranteed 9 shows, and then they were supposed to pick you up for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But then they then they totally broke the contract and said, nope, you just have 6 more shows.
Ugh.
6 shows. And if you make it through the 6, then you're picked up for the rest of the season. So jeez. you were on eggshells like that whole year. But then by the second by the end of that second season, it felt like, you know, there was a firm footing.
It's such an interesting setup,
but I don't think I was like truly not ever nervous until about like year 5.
Oh wow.
Oh really?
And then it was like,
yeah,
I don't care what happens. But I heard Dana Carvey once said it like takes you 5 seasons to not feel nervous, and I kind of agree. Like there would still be moments where I'm like, why am I nervous? And it would just hit you. And then, but I think around that 5th year, good combination of knowing it really well and starting to not care.
Yeah.
And probably also that there's younger people coming in, newer people, so you're like, oh, you now know the difference.
And you don't, if you have a light show, it doesn't matter because the next show you'll probably be in it. And Kevin Nealon actually gave me great advice that he was like, don't worry, don't live from show to show. Just look back. If you can look back at the end of the year and count on your hand 8 or 10 things that you did really well, you had a great year. And just look at it that way. And he's like,
don't be so immediate about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's also said, and you're tall. Tall people do well. tall guys do well on the show.
What was that last
thing?
But Anna said that you had this ability to, you know, you would go up if you did a sketch and it didn't fly.
Yeah.
It just didn't really seem to phase you. Come off stage and you go, well, that sure stunk up the joint. And like you were totally, you just had a great attitude about it.
I would just, I don't know. It's funny, Zach and I talk about, that's what's fun about doing all this press with Zach for this movie is that he and I have this shared kind of, I don't know what it is, almost this masochistic thing of like when it goes terrible.
Just as good.
God, that was fantastic.
Is that
not one person laughed?
Yeah,
there wasn't even a cough. Yeah. It was just silence out
scowls.
There.
Scowls, nothing but scowls and indifference.
Do you think then as a performer, you just like to have any kind of experience, whether it's just some kind of special experience? Oh, they laughed a lot, or not, or it's like not none of your numbers in Kino came up, and you're like, wow, that's really cool.
I don't know what that is. I think it's almost like this thing of. Okay, if you're not going to laugh, I just remember when sketches wouldn't go well, the knee jerk is usually to speed up and get through it and get off stage. I would actually slow way down.
Oh, wow.
And I would like slow the pace way down and take extra long pauses just because I was like, okay, if you people hate it this much, I'm going to punish you. I'm going to make you sit through.
Those are some of the, I've laughed the hardest in some of those late in the show sketches.
I'm just going to like, fine. if you're not going to laugh, you're not going to get off, you know, get out of here sooner.
But was there, was there?
I don't know what that, I don't know if that's, sometimes it's because you think something's really funny and you're like, hey, you're just not getting it. But
well,
then,
that's just being confident.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounds
I guess.
Had cool parents, but, and you just grew up kind of a confident kid, and you're like, hey, fuck you. You know what? I will entertain myself if you are not going to be entertained.
But, yeah, it would. But we had there was one. In fact, Zach guest wrote on SNL for 2 weeks while I was there. That's the first time we met. And of course, had a horrible time because no one told him what to do exactly or where to go, and which is somewhat the nature of that place. It's like, come and guess right. Great. And show up. Hi, what are you here for?
Oh, I was, I was supposed to go.
Oh, who told you you were going to guess right? Oh.
Do I have an office?
No. I guess we can figure it out. Who told this guy to come? And, and it's, so he was like for 2 weeks like, does anyone want to write a sketch? And but he was there when I put up the sketch that worked great at the table, but was one of my, was one of the worst, it was one of the biggest bombs of all time, which we would later, we'd watch, we'd pop in a tape of all the sketches that bombed so horribly. But this was, I'd written a sketch about a guy who worshipped Gabe Kaplan, and and that he worked at an insurance company just because he knew Gabe Kaplan was a client, and he, you know, manicured his look to look. He had the same kind of welcome back Cotter look with the mustache and the fro and the patches on the jacket. And it was the day that Gabe Kaplan had come into the office to sign some papers, and no one had gotten this guy. I was in the bathroom, and no one came to get me. And, so it was just it was me as Gabe Kaplan dressed as him, walking into the break room, and everyone going, God, he was such a great guy. And I was like, yeah, wow, what? Really cool. So glad. It's so fun. I'm like, who are you guys talking about? Oh, Gabe Kaplan was here. And he was like, what? Why didn't you come and get me? And it was just a whole sketch of me being so upset that, did anyone bother to check? Like, you know, this is, like, I love the guy. And it was just disastrous. And, but I, yeah, we would watch that thing and just howl at how silent it was.
Do you have scientific reasons in your head for why you think it didn't work, or do you just sort of feel like, you know what, some stuff's funny to people and other stuff just doesn't work with
exactly
them for whatever
and
reason.
then in looking at it, oh no, this is really obscure, of course no one's gonna laugh. And it's really a quiet sketch, and you know, but you, that show in general, which informs you, for it gives you such a thick skin that you're kind of it really helps when things, you know, don't work with the audience, and you just kind of keep moving on.
Is it better in that show? Because you said some, like, their egos developed. Do you think sometimes it's better to have no ego, or does ego shield you from some of the shit? Or
I think, you know, just going in there and being willing to kind of do anything. Because I remember going up to Adam McKay and saying, hey, you know, I know, because there were some casts were like, I'm just, sorry, pounded on the table.
God damn it.
I'm just delivering a pizza in this sketch. Really? That's it? I don't want to do it. And I told Adam, like, you know, I love those little two line parts, because I can come in and just be odd and then leave the sketch, and you can sometimes get a laugh. And, and that kind of attitude is what you have to have. Like, obviously you want to be in as much as you can, but also doing the little part. Like, there's no small parts really on that show. Well,
there's that story that Damon Wayans has when he was on SNL, and he had a few sketches in a row where he was just a guy coming in to drop something off, and then he was supposed to be a cop that didn't have any lines, I think, and then he was so sick and tired of it. So right when he bust into the room, he just said, he's like, the cops are here, you're under arrest, and it got last, and then he walked off feeling good, and I guess Lomer's just like, mm-mm. And then he got fired off the show.
Don't do that again. Yeah. Good, funny. Yeah.
What was your audition?
The cat thing.
Yeah, I did. I did the cat thing on, I think, the second. It was once again very vague. You were asked to come. Oh no, the first. There was two auditions. There was one audition where it was pretty specific. Actually, it was a a character of your choosing, a political impersonation if you did one, and a celebrity impersonation if you did one. And if you didn't, just 5 to 8 minutes of what you think is funny. So I did Harry Carey at a play reading, and then I did Ted Kennedy doing stand-up comedy, and then I did this this get off the shed guy who's just yelling at his kids to get off this shed.
And then that became like one of the first sketches you had.
Yeah. And but that was talk about, you know, so you walk into 8H, the studio there, and it's literally it's like going into war. It's an empty studio. It's just a camera and a light on you and a boom mic and no one else in the studio. Ugh. And you have to listen to the auditioner. Like you're in the hallway listening to the person ahead of you doing their thing, and you're pacing in this hallway looking at all the pictures of former cast, former sketches, just going, how is my head not going to explode here? And then you just had to go out there and do it. But it was so crazy that I almost didn't feel nervous. And then there was a callback, and that's when I really felt nervous. And but I think that's when I did the cat thing.
Yeah.
And this highway patrolman. And but yeah, I was just there. I was playing with cat toys in silence.
yeah. That's the best part, I think, about watching those audition videos. You can find them, like they're on sometimes like the greatest DVDs or like online.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's just you see this really funny sketch to just silence. Just the weirdest fucking setting.
And Lauren, I don't think he does this anymore because I think he just goes and views people at either improv clubs or, you know, he views them in front of an audience. But he did that to see if you could
continue
stand the pressure of just having no one laughing. I don't know. It's so bizarre.
Even watching like Phil Hartman's audition, which is hilarious, but like the only person you hear laughing is Bernie Brillstein.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the only person you hear laughing, and then he just and then he just doesn't give a shit. He's just like going through his notes.
So it was bizarre.
What was interesting is that you know, SNL is sort of like catapult you use.
Yeah.
Everyone's very aware of who you are. And yet, I remember reading, I think right after Elf came out and it was a big hit, and everyone was like, you know, someone did an interview with you. Like, yeah, you couldn't even. It was, despite the fact that you were this big television name, the film business was like, we can't put him on.
No, totally.
What are we talking about?
No, like Todd Phillips had to kind of fight for me to get into Old School and I left the show and I didn't really have, you know, it's not like I had this stack of scripts waiting for me. It was just, I just thought, it's time, you know, I did it for 7 seasons. I don't want to like stay there for too long. And,
right.
Even though Lauren took me to dinner and tried to give me the logic that it's the wrong time to leave because you're kind of at the top of your game and you should wait to start going down a little bit.
Oh, before, I don't know if that's really the...
Let me sleep on that. But
you're too hot.
He never wants anyone to leave ever. But it was a whole new... It was like, okay, you're in this one club. Now you got to fight to get in the next club type of thing.
I guess no matter where you are in the industry, because, you know, if you can remember what it was like before, you know, everything worked for you. It's just that idea of like, oh, if I could just get that one thing, everything's going to be awesome. And then you get that thing and you're like, shit, this is, oh, if I just had.
No, it's true. It's like wherever you are in the food chain, there's always another area you can't get into. You're not supposed to be there and that sort of thing. So that's why you just kind of have to, you just kind of have to be happy where you're at. And you know, it doesn't mean to be any less ambitious or want to try to get to that next thing, but at the same time, it's okay to just kind of keep doing the things you're doing.
You were kind of an anomaly for a performer, particularly for a comedy performer, in that sense, because the business seems to attract, you know, performers are naturally sensitive. I think most of them are.
Yeah.
And then obviously there are egos involved, and then the business just does nothing but just like punch you in the face most of the time. So it's interesting that you. Or just like, you know.
But, you know, I learned quickly, like, stay away from the internet. Don't read anything.
Fuck.
Yeah, Chris.
That's, that was my mistake in 94.
Beyonce doesn't read internet comments.
She doesn't.
I've been online since 94. I can't get off.
But that, I know, that's because right when we were doing the show, 95, 96, they would, you could go online and they would rank the cast.
Oh.
So someone would send you a thing like, hey, you were ranked like number two in the cat or whatever. Like, oh, that's cool. I'm gonna look on that.
Then a comedian goes, only number two?
Yeah, yeah. or you'd go to another site or another, you know, blog or whatever, and you would be at the bottom of the list. And
they're like, oh, this is in terms of head width. And I'm like, it's not even a
that's a weird list.
But
the internet ranks us, and I'm like, there's only three of us.
Well, then you're in the top three.
Yeah, top three.
Top three. Yes.
But yeah, I mean, there was some magazine, I think it used to be, because there was Entertainment Weekly and Entertainment Magazine, I believe it was. One of those, I think it was called Entertainment and it went out of business, but they, the first show, they gave me the title of Most Annoying Newcomer.
Oh, and, God.
So I made a, my buddy, someone sent me a plaque of it to like put on my desk.
Yeah.
And I just put it on the outside of my office door. And, it was like good news and bad news. You're like the only cast member mentioned by name, but you were listed as the most annoying. And so, in a weird way, it was great. Oh, and Tom Shales, the Washington Post,
yeah.
You know, later when I was leaving the show, he said, hey, I'm sorry about all the stuff I wrote about you. And I was like, oh, I wasn't even aware. He's like, oh, okay, good, good.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Oh, here's a portfolio of times I just wanted to.
But anyway, it was just good to not, I just didn't even go near that
So
stuff.
when you make a movie and you release it, it's just like, okay, it's out of my hands now.
I used to read a lot of the stuff more and I just let it go.
Because it doesn't make a difference, right?
No, it does.
You're still going to go on and continue to try and do stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to tell. I most of that stuff, especially the reviews are short. It's not going to give you any great insight and go, oh, this is what I did wrong.
Plus the ones that are sent to you that are like, hey, great review and so-and-so. It always starts, in my case, like, I've usually hated everything he's done. Yeah. But this one surprised me.
That's how I know that mechanism. That's how people, quote unquote, keep it real.
Yeah.
They're like, I want this to come from a real place. Yeah. So I got to shit on him first.
Yeah. And it's that new style of, you know, instead of just like, this movie did not work for me for this reason, or I really enjoyed it because of this.
Yeah.
It's now so personal and bizarre. Yeah.
And well, it's more about the, how clever can I, if I were a car driving into a lake and that lake was filled with spiders,
right.
Will Ferrell's movie would be at the bottom. Of, like, what? Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Totally.
What are we doing?
One of the greatest ones was, I remember reading, a review. I opened up the LA Times and it was 40-Year-Old Virgin had just come out and I want to see, I'm like, oh wow, Steve Carell's movie. I want to see what they think of it. And it looked like it was a positive headline. And the first two paragraphs, the reviewer, were about me and, how this guy's terrible, his buffoonery, and Steve Carell was an anchorman, and so I was expecting it to be like that. But it wasn't. It was really good and charming and this, that, and the other. But it was a whole two paragraphs just kind of nailing me, and and I was like, God, I don't think I'm in the movie. I don't think.
Well, you might get a check.
Yeah.
You're on one of the TVs in the background of the electronic store.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so yeah, you kind of learn to just like, oh, no, I won't. But you're tempted. You're still tempted to look at stuff. But yeah,
is the fame thing still weird to you? I was reading something that some magazine got on your case because they're like, he's a bad autograph signer, because people come up to you apparently and go, oh, I've always wanted your autograph, and you're like, really? How bad do you want it? Like, you fuck with them, but that sounded hilarious to me.
Well, I only mess with the ones that have
the binders,
and the stacks.
And they're gonna sell it
from like.
How do they know?
I don't know.
And how do
it's
they
so
get
so weird? And they're ready.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who? How did you know that third person that was on that season of Melrose Place would be at this place that I am?
Just, that's their car. That's their entire car is filled with it.
I'm your biggest fan. I'm your the funniest ones are the ones in New York. Like, if you do a show like Letterman, there's a whole crowd, and then they'll follow you. They'll on foot, and like, please, Will, please, I waited. I waited 5 hours, please. And then follow you to the next light. Please, please, please. Follow you to the next light. Please, please. And finally, fuck you! I hate you!
They turn quick.
And then I have the driver turn back, and I'm like, you're right. I'm sorry. Let me sign that for you. No. You got me with that last comment.
Grave error on my part. Yeah, so.
But no, I just mess with the pros sometimes. And but yeah, Autograph, I think it was Autograph Magazine, voted me worst celebrity. But what's
sounds
the,
like a fake. So what do you work for? Autograph
Magazine. That's a real thing.
And but here's the crazy thing. With media nowadays, I'm on the treadmill and I'm watching CNN, and along the bottom it says Johnny Depp voted best autograph signer, Will Ferrell worst. On CNN.
That's very important news.
If they do anything, it's news.
And anyway, that's a cross I have to bear.
So I guess what are you going to do to try to increase your Autograph Magazine rankings?
I have to.
Then Billy Bush.
I've dropped
then,
off. Yeah. I'm still in the top five, apparently, but I'm not number one.
Done. Who's number one? Let's take
Boo-hoo.
Him down.
Boo-hoo.
You know, who is number one?
That was Johnny Depp.
No, Johnny Depp's the best.
He's the
I'm
best.
Talking about, like, who's the worst.
Who's number one on the worst?
Now, what is number one? Does that mean they'll just sign anything?
Number one.
I guess.
That they make a real point to, like.
When I was a kid, I would go to Fenway Park and get autographs.
Then it's going to be someone weird. It's going to be someone kind of weird who will sign anything. Someone who will sign anything has to, you know.
I don't know. Yeah.
I guess that's me, because I will sign anything. I don't give a shit.
Well, but, you know. And no criticism against that either, but it's just kind of like whatever. But maybe that's just really, maybe Johnny Depp's just super smart that way, and he's just really, you know, the fans just love him even more.
Everything is just like a beautiful. Yeah.
What's your name? What's your dad's name?
When we locked eyes only moments ago.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time you saw me?
Yeah.
Moliere once said. Come on.
But yeah, that is a weird subculture.
It is. And there were folks. When I was like 12, I would go get autographs at Fenway Park before the games, and there were these guys. There was one guy named Softy, and he's still there. Softy's still there, but like the players would be like, not today. We got you like 6 times yesterday. I'd be like, really?
Yeah, because that guy probably makes a living off of then going on the internet and selling all these autographs. Yeah. It's like, well, you know, like Tom Wilson, Biff from Back to the Future, like he won't sign Back to the Future memorabilia. Like someone brought like a cassette tape soundtrack of the movie last time he performed here. And like he's like, nah, anything, just get me anything else, I'll sign it.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he knows people are just going to use that and then like sell it for a bunch of money.
But now, have you heard the supposedly the blue pen is transferable?
Oh. No.
No? That a black pen you can't transfer off of it.
We don't read Autograph Magazine, so we don't know.
And what there was. This 5-page layout in Autograph Magazine that was so fascinating.
Well, who was the fold-out's autograph?
Yeah.
What were the autograph's turn-ons?
I jerked off so hard at that fold-out.
So the autograph liked motorcycles.
Yeah. And hated mean people.
Hearts instead of dots on the eyes.
Turn-offs. Hairy back.
Some of those autographs were born in like 94 now, you guys. It makes me feel old.
Oh, God.
I was at an event, at my friend's charity event, and taking photos with people, and there was a guy who's like, Will! You know, Bob so-and-so. Yeah? How are you? Autograph Magazine. I said, oh, yeah. He goes, you're great with people. You take photos and do everything. I go, I know. I don't. He goes, I go, yeah. Why don't you change that in your magazine? He's like, I can't. It's beyond my control.
He gets on the phone. Stop the presses.
It's voted by, He's like, oh, wow, okay.
16 people across this great nation of ours.
Maybe you can write a column.
That sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. Anyway.
Got some stuff to do.
Oh, okay.
You're actually
an all right guy.
I just run the magazine.
Anyway, as you can understand, I'm very busy.
A lot of autographs. A
lot of
to write about.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Do they analyze the autographs? So like, Alan Thicke has a weird loop under the H in his name, which means, or is it literally just here are pictures of autographs?
I don't know. Yeah. I bet it's like weirdly somewhat fascinating things to like a person like me who's like, that person changed their autograph over the years.
How do they have enough content to have a monthly magazine.
I wonder if it's like Rolling Stone, where they just happen to have like really good investigative journalists. It's like, have you read this thing about Pakistan and the new Autograph magazine? The guy's like lived with the Taliban for like 3 years.
Turns out Osama would sign anything.
Yeah. it was very hard for us because we wanted to vote him the best. Like by the rules, he really would have won.
Bob actually put his foot down on that.
We're just sort of, you know,
for how isolated he was. the fact that he produced so many autographs, I mean, he blows everyone away.
He would actually force his guys to like let him give him autographs. Yeah. Oh, yet again. Okay. Everyone loves me.
It's really great. He does a big O and then writes Sama inside the O. It's really
They're
creative.
Beautiful. They're beautiful.
Yeah. Obama should take that as a signature. That's a pretty O and then just Obama in the middle.
Well, isn't that what Oprah does? Doesn't she go O?
Does she go
Oprah? I think the pra's off to the side.
I don't remember.
Oh, the pra's separate?
Can we get Ben from Autograph Magazine?
Bob.
On our next podcast.
You probably have an answer on your next podcast.
Were you ever sorry that you started doing Bush just because you ultimately end up getting pulled into a lot of political shit that you probably don't feel like being involved in?
No, I once again, like many things that have happened to me, I just kind of laughed that it happened because it was, I think it was literally as arbitrary as Daryl Hammond, who is just a master mimic at everyone, had a really good Al Gore. And then Lauren Michaels, like, you want to do Bush? And I was like, yeah, okay. There's no way that guy's going to win. And so it's so bizarre that it happened.
There was a really good SNL. It was like after Phil had left and they were doing auditions for who was going to be the next Bill Clinton. And it was just like every cast member was doing their version of Bill. And then like Tim Meadows sits down and he's like, my fella, I'm not going to get this.
Yeah. But it does tend to follow you around a little bit.
And then whenever there's an election, people are like, what does Will Ferrell's George Bush think about
this? Yeah. Or what are you working on now?
What
president? Well, I'm not on the show. I don't. Nothing.
Yeah. Thought I would go retro. I'm doing a Millard Fillmore.
Yeah, yeah. Howard Taft.
Just come out in a fat suit.
Hello. That's not right.
Just got out of the bath.
You don't present new impressions to your family every Christmas?
Right. I should.
So I didn't really buy anything, but I'm giving you a lot.
Huh? Right? See? It's like the little emoji light bulb, Jonah. Now you understand how the process works. With Funny or Die, you guys completely revolutionized web-based comedy, which was really interesting.
That's what they say.
Well, it's true because so many, right around the time Funny or Die popped up, every studio was like, we got to get on this web comedy thing. Like every studio had a bit, you know, like Turner had Super Deluxe and Sony had one and like there were a bunch of them. It was just like, you know, the proprietary video players, web-based comedy. And I think they all assumed, oh, people will watch these like a television channel, and they don't.
No.
But Funny or Die was the one basically that was, I mean, Crackle still does stuff, but I mean, a lot of those failed and Funny or Die managed
to prevail somehow, some way.
Well, I think it's because you guys, I mean, first and foremost, the content's funny.
Yeah.
But there's also this community around it and this kind of idea, and it sort of feels like, oh, it's a sort of weird fraternity where it's like Will and Zach hang out, and then, you know, then there's Marion Cotillard, and then all these other, they're just all friends, and these are what people...
Yeah, we couldn't, I mean, we were, you know, we were pretty ambivalent about getting involved with it to begin with, because we thought, this isn't going to work, and how are we going to convince people to, come and dedicate your time for free and make a video? I think the fact that Adam and I were able to say, just come and here's the freedom to get to do things that you don't get to do in other formats. And we just got lucky with Andrew Steele and Farrah over there. and to all the support people. And
well, it's become kind of like another, you know, like how Groundlings is kind of a scene and UCB is a scene. And it's kind of this like proving ground for a lot of like, you know, young writers and directors. Like the guys there now, like Danny Jelinek and Scott Gardner, and before that, Eric Appel and stuff like that. It's like, you know, you got, and like Eric left, and then these other guys started coming up. Matt and Oz are now like starting to direct TV shows. And
so it's, it's somehow, become this lab to like, you know, cut your teeth and then, and then oddly enough, go on to TV, you know, go on to the more traditional kind of mediums. But it's pretty cool. It's great that, because, you know, Sequoia, the venture capital group that funded it, you know, I don't know if it's it like fits the exact, I think the things they like to invest in, you know, go, are supposed to go spike and they sell in a year. And they, and this has been a very gradual growth. Partly because they've allowed it to happen, and so they've stuck with it and kept funding it to where we could now I think we're actually able to pay everyone who works there, and it funds itself.
And
so.
did the money, like, or did the production equipment and just kind of the whole infrastructure of that help start like Gary Sanchez as a production company?
That was separate. Yeah. That was our own you know,
label.
Yeah, our own label. That we, you know, that we did, but they kind of started around right around the same time. But
they've always shared offices, right?
Yeah, and but that, that's kind of a different thing too. To actually, we wanted to be under the same roof, so that you know, if Dick, our CEO, had any ideas, that he could come right to us, and vice versa. And but it helps with the flow of everything.
Yeah, just having everyone there.
Yeah, yeah. But it is bizarre that now people come to you know, it's become a term, like the studios are like, we want to do something on Funny or Die. We should do a Funny or Die video. Yeah. And well,
even
which is great.
Even in pitches, you know, it's used as a, it's used as a, people refer to it as a genre.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
we
have to do one of these Funny or Die things. Yeah. Even when they're not talking about working for Funny or Die, like we have to do a Funny or Die video.
But it is funny too, that there's still, we still laugh at that. Like when people come to the company, they're still like, and we'd love to create a viral video.
Yeah.
Create a viral video is the funniest sentence.
We want to make a hit record.
And and you just nod your head and go,
we want to create a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
And,
well, it's just positive and negative electrons.
So, yeah. And even just
how lightning's made.
Okay, let's
it's
take
much
that.
Easier than a viral
let's
video.
Okay, so after we watch Chud, so we're going to make lightning.
Yeah. There's a character named, you know, Electron.
Hey, you guys want to be lightning wizards?
We guarantee we will make you a viral video.
But that's like that. Yeah, every company is now, it's like, you know, we need to make these viral videos. And you go, you can't call it a viral video. And the idea of trying to make one guarantees
it will not happen.
Exactly.
At all.
Well, I know just from, you know, just doing this exercise on our YouTube channel the last several months, it's so much different now. Like stuff, maybe, do you find that stuff that you think like, oh my God, this is gonna fucking destroy, then people are just like, no thanks.
We the best example of that was the we shot this video for kind of where we got all the everyone who's played a president on SNL.
Oh, together. Right.
Oh, yeah, that thing. Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, oh, and Mike Farah pulled this thing off. And he, you know, we got Chevy Chase and Dana and Dan Aykroyd and all of us to be in this video. Jim Carrey did Reagan. And it was literally like, this thing is going to be huge. We're going to get 10 million hits.
We're going to get all the hits.
I can't sleep tonight.
And this drops in midnight.
Okay. What, is it posted? Yes. What's going on? It was like waiting for the grosses of a movie. You know, what? Huh? Okay, we're at a million. Okay, that's not bad. I think it got up to... I don't know what it's at now, but I think it in its initial kind of, you know, posting, it got somewhere up around eventually 5 million hits, which is nothing to sneeze at.
No, that's
great.
That's fantastic.
But it was thought like, oh, you, this is an event. You've never had all these actors together.
You're like, you're going to break the internet.
Yeah. And it case in point.
And it was funny because it was probably really expensive. That was a big set. There was a lot of people. There was a lot of coordinating.
Ron Howard came and directed it.
Yeah.
It was like this, you know, we had press effects, around it.
It was makeup.
It was like a real release. And then, some people shared it, got on TV.
And then if you think about Landlord, like that was shot just, there wasn't even mics on it. It was just onboard mic.
2 hours at my house.
Yeah.
And then that's the thing that, once again, it just proves the point that you just can't, you just have to take your best weird little shots and whatever's going to happen.
Do you have different, do you have a different mindset for live performance versus a film comedy versus now this internet type comedy? Does your head go to a different place?
I mean, it's just, I think those, you know, Funny or Die is now an avenue for those weird little ideas that would pop into my head and there wouldn't be a place to use them. Yeah. And, in fact, that the Carly Rae Jepsen song.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, I just want to make my own video to that for no reason.
And you can.
You should be doing the exact same thing, like washing the car, et cetera.
No, I was just going to be like, because I grew my mustache out this summer in Sweden, and it didn't quite get fully grown. It was just kind of stubbly, and I really look like a weirdo. I really look like a weird guy who shouldn't be hanging out with people. That mixed with that song would be a good combination.
Can you do?
But that's a Funny or Die idea, you know.
Can you do that though? Because there has been many times where I've always just wanted to make my own version of a video for, like, you know, Desiree's "You Gotta Be" or just different stuff. Like, would you guys be allowed to do that because it's someone else's song?
We could do it, and then they would call us. The lawyers for the label would call us and make us take it down.
That's it. But by that time, someone's already ripped it and put it on YouTube a few times over.
So we would just pray. Let's just put it up, see what happens. And we'll take it down if someone complains. Yeah.
But I can't imagine at this point. They'd probably be like, I mean, I'm sure the artist.
You never know.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
No matter how violently you're making fun of them. They just love it. You're referencing them anyway.
Yeah.
Anchorman 2? Anything?
We're just writing the script right now. And
how's your writing process?
Well, usually it's Adam and I just sit in a room and trade off, you know, one of the other lies on the couch and the other one types on the computer, and we just spit ideas out and just kind of do it that way. But we've been isolated this time, so he took half the script and I took the other half, and we're gonna merge them together.
I hope they have nothing to do with each other.
And they don't. They don't write
that. The plot, like in Act Two, are they in the Congo? Yeah. Like just some weird.
So, but then, and just because we just thought, let's just, since I was gone and doing all this, let's at least try to take advantage of, and maybe we'll get some usable stuff. So we've got a ton of work ahead of us. Yeah, we'll probably start. He's on vacation right now, so next week we'll start kind of full bore intense writing.
If someone was just like, Will Ferrell, you can no longer make films in Hollywood. I don't know who that is.
It's the mayor of show business.
Yeah. I've been elected by the people.
He had a great profile in Autograph Magazine.
I have a good signature. Very confident eyes. But what would you do? Would you
That's a great question, because I often, throughout my career, I have thought of things I can do. I got excited once that I figured I could drive a cab. UPS, I kind of like the whole, I could be a really good mailman.
Yep.
I like
sorting.
I like the organization of, like, if I had a route and like, "Hello, Mr. Henderson, how are you?" And
Will Ferrell's delivering my mail.
Yes, I used to be him.
Fucking Autograph Magazine. Why do you subscribe to this shit?
Delivering Autograph.
I'm gonna throw this in the tree.
To deliver the thing.
I'm not getting my Autograph Magazine. Yeah, I'll look for it. I don't know.
Maybe they discontinued it or
something. That's up for the feds to figure out.
Yeah, I don't. I would probably be maybe coaching or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sports?
High school sports, maybe.
Oh, possibly. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be fun. But I don't really know. I don't really know.
It's not anything you're going to have to worry about, but I'm just curious because you just seem like the kind of guy where at some point you go, hey, you know, I think I'm just going to open a bait store for a while and then you just do it. And you
bait
just have it, like a bait shop in Sweden. And then you just do it for a while and you're like, that was fun. Yeah. And then you just kind of do something else you want to do. Is that the key to everything, really? Do you ever feel like, well, if I compromise a little, then I can, you know, or do you really just feel like, no, you have to sort of be all in for what you're doing, no matter what?
You know, it's, I've kind of, like, if you really think about how hard this is to do and, you know, the odds of success and those are the things, that you'll get so intimidated, at least for myself, that, you know, because I would go, I don't know how many times I would go to an open mic night and sit in the back of the club and like try to force myself to put my name on the list and then just too afraid to do it. Yeah. And I probably went to 30 shows where I just sat in the back and I'd watch one comic and say, oh, I'm funnier than them. And oh, no, that guy nailed it. I'm not that funny. Yeah. No way. But I kind of had to make it a game. You know, my dad is a musician and has played music forever. And when I sat down with him and said, hey, so I'm going to try this, I think. And I'm going to try this comedy thing. And I'm like, do you have any words of advice? And he said, you know what? Just know that there's luck involved. And that if you... And he gave me a guy what seems like a weird piece of advice, but it was actually really helpful. He said, if it was based solely on talent, I wouldn't worry about you because I think you have some real talent, which, you know, but just know that there, you need a little bit of luck and that if you don't get it, if you, you know, get to a certain point where you've tried and tried and tried, it's okay to stop doing and do something else and you won't have failed. And for some reason, that took all the pressure. I was like, oh, this is a crapshoot anyway. Might as well just have fun.
Dad won't get mad.
Yeah, yeah. and just like, this is so crazy anyway. And let's just give it a shot. And so I didn't. I've almost never treated it like it's a real thing that's happening to me.
Yeah.
Which sounds bizarre, but it just, because if you stop to think, you know.
You'd go insane.
You'd go, yeah, yeah. And I also had another acting coach who in fact used to teach right over here on one of these streets, just like a cold reading class. And he was just like, you know, it's just, you're just throwing darts against the dartboard and just keep throwing them and one of them will hit. And,
yeah.
And he gave me great advice going, I said, Ian, cause he had worked with Lisa Kudrow and, a couple other groundlings. And I said, Ian, after class, I'm like, guess what? I'm going to audition for Saturday Night Live. He's like, what? Oh, okay. Well, I go, what do you think? And he's like, okay, well, just treat it like a fun trip to New York and just know that just the audition itself is a huge achievement and whatever happens, happens. So I tried, you know, I didn't fully do that. I was still nervous as hell.
And sure.
It still meant a lot to me, but I tried to just, you know, keep it all slightly in perspective so that you don't get so crazy with it all. Yeah.
Well, it's hard. I mean, they're like I was saying earlier, you know, for people who are, you know, people are like, I want to break into comedy. Or I want to break into, it's like, yeah, that's fine. Just be careful because if you're predisposed to beat yourself up a lot anyway,
this is
not going to help that.
Totally. And then also too, and if you know, you guys find that when you get asked that, how do I break in? It's like, if you're already asking that question, you're probably not going to. make it, or because, as you guys know, you just figure out a way. You know,
you
whether
just do
it's,
it.
We just do it. Whether it's
really just showing just, up, 90% of it is
totally
showing
and
up.
Just getting up on stage.
Just
and
keep
just,
on doing it. Yeah.
It is. It is that sort of. Yeah. You know. I mean, I believe that if you know, sort of like the dartboard theory, though. But if you do the right things and you can kind of keep yourself in somewhat of the right headspace, mm-hmm. and you make kind of positive choices, doing things that you love, that. Things will reveal themselves to you that wouldn't have happened before because you're kind of on that path.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can, to a degree, make some of your own luck.
Sure.
You can't, obviously, like, hey, I was just walking by and you'd be great for this picture I'm making. Yeah. Also, you would have
to
go
listening.
Back in time.
What do you need?
Yeah.
So it's there is a little element to that.
Yeah.
But in general, you know, I think the lesson is, and you know, you, I've always,
but it's weird. It's yeah, it's a weird combination of it. You know, you still have to be industrious and
yeah,
and work, but to really yeah, just try to have as much fun as you can.
It's probably not just gonna happen at you,
right? Yeah,
it's not gonna. It's gonna be. It's like you said. I mean, the classic comic thing is when you first start in this business and you're like, "Have that fucking guy." Like, don't ever compare yourself to other people.
Totally.
Which I'm sure on SNL was probably. It's very hard for that not to happen sometimes because everyone's just right on top of each other.
Right. And you would, yeah. I mean, you know, but I'm probably different only in that I just loved the idea of the ensemble. I loved of kind of really laughing at, you know, I just love comedy. So if it doesn't mean there were a couple times where I'm like, God, I'm jealous of that piece. That was so funny. But for the most part, it was like, God, that's great. And I don't even think I could have thought of that or written that. And just appreciating that there are, you know, a bunch of other different styles and people who are just as funny as you or and get over it and then trust that what you do is good also.
Well, I think it's important to remember that, or at least hopefully why a lot of people do this is because they genuinely appreciate comedy and that we're generally comedy nerds. And that it's okay to appreciate other people doing funny things as opposed to just like, I want to be famous. I want to be famous.
Well, that's the thing.
Because I don't think that fixes all of your problems.
Yeah. No.
Do you feel like all your problems got fixed when you became famous?
Well, once again, bad example. When I got famous, everything got better. Like, totally all my problems were gone.
Well, everyone knew it. So I fucking knew it,
I think, like, one in 10,000.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It doesn't really fix anything, you know. It's just a whole different set of circumstances.
Yeah, if you have a limp and you get famous, you're still gonna have a limp.
Well, that's the thing. We were talking about this the other day. Is that I'm sort of at a point in doing this. I'm trying to make this about me. I'm just trying to illustrate a point. But
here we go again.
Here we go. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. My mother said I was adorable.
These cherub cheeks.
Jonah, wake up. Wake up. Are you dreaming about me right now?
Jonah.
All right, now you just have a sinus problem.
First time Chris caused your snoring.
Yeah. Oh, I just had the worst dream.
It was me talking about the Dave Matthews Band.
Hey,
I'm just kidding, buddy. But just the idea is that, you know, there are a lot of things happening for me now that I always kind of wanted to happen, and sort of realizing, just because you reach a point doesn't mean you're not still you and you don't have the same kind of issues you had before.
Yeah.
Then you're just
completely.
Like, oh, fuck, that was fun that thing happened. Yeah. I still feel bad about that other dumb thing.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's important to just focus on making yourself happy and following the things that you like.
Yeah, because if you're working, you know, really hard and you're just like pushing forward and you still haven't gotten to where you want to be, if you're having fun in the process, like no one can take that away from you. You know, that's the part.
Totally. I mean, and that's when, you know, when I was kind of trying literally everything from stand up to sketch to, you know, these cabaret shows, and we do this, you know, dumb thing called Simpatico where just me and two other guys in a full like speed skating bodysuits being like a bad magic act meets Cirque du Soleil and just as a thing we just cooked up, and next thing you know we were being asked to perform at the Montreal Comedy Festival, you know, doing this weird thing, you know. So it was like I don't know, those are the little victories that all add up in the end.
Yeah. And you like the idea of someone who is just really passionate about a thing, no matter what it is. They're just really fucking into that thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at least as long as they're not obnoxious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as a comedy, like for comedy, like the skater guys, they're just fucking, love it
so
much.
Yeah. Any time there's like, you know, that's such a fun angle. Anyone who's so over the top into what they're doing. Yeah. That's always insane to me. Yeah.
Well, we're about at an hour, and I don't want to take advantage of your time because it was nice of you to come to our comic book store and hang out.
I've got to prepare for the Conan O'Brien show now.
Are you doing the Conan O'Brien
Conan O'Brien. My preparation will be take a long nap.
On the couch.
You should do that. Can I just sleep on the.
You could do that.
Or wake me up when my segment started. I'll sleep through the monologue, the band
just
practice.
Wake me up when it's time.
You could do the thing that you could do the fun game that improvisers like to do to, when they fuck around. You could just deny everything he says. Yeah. So you're in this movie? Nope. Was it fun? No. What are you? No, Conan.
That was nope. Uh-uh. Nope. Can you tell us a story about the nope?
I don't think so.
Nope. I don't think anything. No. I can't. I don't remember anything.
Literally nothing happened of note.
But you know, like, you're at the point where if you did that, like, if I did that, people would be like, what a fucking dick. Yeah. But if you did that, people would be like, that's Will. He's just being funny. That's kind of
You know what, though? Sadly, we, once again, Zach and I in this press junket, there was a lot of that. Like, we're, what? Was there a lot of hijinks on the set? Not really.
No, it's a job.
We went to dinner a lot.
So crazy dinners?
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of food fights? And
no. You ever have any wacky ingredients?
Did Zach make faces out of his food and make him do voices and stuff?
No.
Oh, shit.
We talked about each other's families and our upbringings.
Oh.
Oh. That was
okay.
Wacky upbringings?
Yeah. So it's, no, we didn't get that wacky.
It's a comedy?
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
All right.
Well, for these comedians, comedy is no laughing matter.
Yeah. These comedies is serious business.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my time.
I guess
my 4 minutes. I didn't get anything. My producer's gonna fire me.
Did you want to put on a clown head or something, or do a? I don't.
For right now?
No, I just meant on this campaign tour.
On the campaign, yeah.
I'm sorry, I was still in the bit.
You were still, still at the junket.
Yeah, the problem is that I was
he had turned into the interviewer.
I disappeared.
He was worried about being fired by his producer.
Yeah, I was there, and then...
And then you had changed characters.
I was a young reporter.
No. You guys were both reporters.
We were both reporters.
I was just a reporter.
And
ageless.
I weren't listening.
I completely checked out because I'm playing the listener of this podcast.
This is, by the way, is this one for the ages, this podcast? Or is it, might not use it.
The podcast.
A good chance
it
you might
the
not use
podcast
it.
For the ages.
If you want, please.
This is number 232.
This is just for
edit
us.
Edit me out as much as you want.
Thanks. It was going to be weird if we asked you if we could do that, but now that you've given us the okay.
Go ahead. Just chop.
Our guest today is, and then silence.
Yeah.
And then we're laughing something.
And Jonah snoring, and then back.
Yeah. And that's it. 4 minutes. Good. 4 minutes of Will Ferrell. So the campaign people should go see. I hadn't seen the trailer for the campaign.
You laughed really hard,
dude,
at Comic-Con.
I never. Yeah. It was a genuine laugh because, I guess I can say this because it's in the Red Band trailer, the baby punching joke, I've just never seen that. Because obviously it's
the
sort of
execution.
The obvious way is like, oh, they hit the baby and everyone's like, or they don't show it. But. Yeah. But just going the opposite direction of like you see the fist connect with the baby's face in slow motion, and then the shock ripple through the baby's face and the spit flying out. Right, that fucking unfolded.
Yeah, and any other movie would just cut to a guy going, "Oh hell no!" And then a dog going, "Huh?"
Is that so? With something like
the dogs
we have
point.
A dog. We do have a dog in the movie.
Do you have any dog reaction shots?
Yeah. Nah. We do. Wait, no, I think we cut that out.
Married.
We got one day with the dog. We just need a lot of head tilts so we can seem confused about things that
are
happening.
We do have the dog from The Artist, though, in the movie.
What's that dog's name again?
Uggy,
yes.
Got to run you a pretty penny now.
The subtext
I'm
here
so
is...
fucking jealous of that dog. Yeah. Jonah, come on, man.
No, just fucking,
we just
like,
talked about it.
Jonah, you're not even competing for the same roles.
I got fur. He's got fur. Like, I could
have
fucking done it.
You just haven't shaved. That's different.
What was that?
But I love the trailer for the campaign and I thank you for, you know, the panel was really fun. So thanks for coming.
My God,
playing
thank
around.
You. You wrangled it beautifully.
It was a blast.
Yes.
Will Ferrell, the campaign opens August 10th. Everybody finish this for a number.
Give me a minute.
It's a Friday in the turns.
So hard on the D.
All right. Enjoy your burrito, everybody. Enjoy your burrito.
Okay, so when we do this for real.
Good
dry run.
So we take a break.
Yeah. It's the halfway point. We're going to take an intermission.
I sweated through my earphones. So that's for your next guest.
Next, we're going to talk about the teenage years. And then I would like you to prepare a couple sketches.
It's a six-part series.
These may need to be dry cleaned.
We're going to set the timer, and then you go write a two-minute sketch.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.